Hello everyone and welcome to Usual Disclaimer with Eleanor Neal, a true crime podcast where we crack open some of the most notorious cases in history. Given the topics that we'll be investigating, it goes without saying that this show comes with a content warning. The details can get a bit heavy and you might find some of the themes we discuss triggering. Listener discretion is strongly advised and check the description for some resources and further information. So this case really interested me when I first heard of it because I'd heard of the girl's name. Her name is Fanny Adams, but I didn't know where I knew the name from, if you know what I mean. So there's a saying in England, I don't know if it's like worldwide or whatever, but people say Sweet Fanny Adams, and I'll explain where that saying comes from at the end of the video. But this case is one of the first ever recorded cases to make like national headlines. This case literally happened in the 1860s. I just want to give my usual disclaimer that I mean absolutely no disrespect to anyone that I talk about in this video. This is all just information that I have found on the internet and I'm compiling into one video. So Fanny Adams was born on April 30th, 1859 in Hampshire in England. She lived with her mother and father, Harriet and George Adams, along with her five siblings. In age order, these were Ellen, George, Walter, and then Fanny was the fourth youngest, and then Lizzie, and then Lily Ada. Fanny was described as tall, she was very intelligent, she was very kind of older looking, so she was just 8 years old, but she looked maybe like 13, 14 years old. She was known around the town that she lived in a town called Alton in Hampshire, and she was known for just her very like cheerful, lively disposition. She was just always smiling. Every time she passed anyone on the street, she'd say hi, have a conversation. She was just a very like lively 8-year-old girl. Fanny had a best friend called Minnie Warner, who was also 8 years old. She lived like two houses down from her, and they spent like every waking moment together. They were best friends, but they were more like sisters. Like I said, the town that Fanny lived in was called Alton, and it was very well known for its supply of hops, which is a plant used in like beer production. And because of this, it meant that the town had a lot of hop fields, it had a lot of breweries, it had just a lot of jobs surrounding the production of beer. On the afternoon of August 24th, 1867, Fanny was playing in the garden with her best friend Minnie Warner, and her 5-year-old younger sister, Lizzie. It was a really warm, sunny day that day, and the girls were getting a little bit bored playing in the garden. They'd been there all day, and so they decided to ask Fanny's mother, Harriet, if they could go to the meadow at the end of the lane. This meadow was called Flood Meadow, and it had like hop fields around it. It was just a really nice little area where the girls would go and play. It was safe, it was a really like large area, they had so much room to play, so they used to go there quite often. Harriet agreed because she wanted to do housework, she wanted the girls out of her way really, and they'd been there so many times, she trusted them, it was only at the end of the road, so she just let all three of them go and play there. And you've got to remember that this was the 1800s and crime rates were absolutely nothing like they are nowadays. To Harriet, there had been no kind of major crimes in her living memory. So she'd never witnessed any kind of abductions or murders, or she'd never heard of anything like that happening in the town. So she felt completely safe letting all three girls just go and play. So the girls set off walking to the meadow. They took a shortcut through one of the hop fields, and that was when they bumped into a friendly face. 29-year-old Frederick Baker, who was a solicitor's clerk in the town. Baker was relatively new to the town, he'd been there about 2 months, but the girls recognised him because he was always in church every week, and like the whole town all went to the same church. So they recognised him, they knew his face, they'd said hi to him, so they felt safe, stood talking to him for a bit. Baker picked the girls some blackberries to eat and just kind of watched them play. They were running up and down this road that was nicknamed the Hollow. They were just having fun, and then they came back and ate the blackberries with Baker. Eventually the girls got pretty bored and kind of tired, and particularly Lizzie and Minnie wanted to go home. But Baker tried persuading all three of them to stay, particularly Fanny. Baker offered Fanny half a penny to go for a walk with him, but then Lizzie and Minnie also wanted to come. They didn't want to be left by themselves. They wanted to go wherever Fanny was going, but Baker didn't want that. So then Baker offered Lizzie and Minnie 3 halfpennies to go off and buy themselves some sweets while he went on a walk with Fanny. But then Fanny refused to go on this walk with him. Baker then kind of realised that he didn't have to persuade Fanny. He was so much bigger than her, so much more powerful than her, And so he just picked her up and walked away with her as Minnie and Lizzie watched. And so Lizzie and Minnie ran straight home to Minnie's mother, Martha Warner, and they kind of told her the whole story, but Martha just kind of brushed it off. Like I said, it was the 1800s and things like abduction didn't happen. And so Martha just kind of thought that they were playing a joke on her or playing a game or something. She just didn't think that a man had picked up Fanny and taken her somewhere. And with the girls being just 8 and 5 years old, when Martha kind of reacted very calm, like she didn't care, the girls then thought, oh, well, Fanny must be safe. If my mum don't care, then we shouldn't really care. And because of Martha's calm demeanour, the girls just kind of carried on playing. They didn't think that anything was really wrong. They thought that, well, Fanny would be fine because otherwise Martha would be panicking. So the girls carried on playing at Minnie's house for a little while, and then finally Lizzie, the 5-year-old, Fanny's younger sister, decided to go home. This was at around 5 p.m. Lizzie returned home, obviously without Fanny, and when Harriet, their mother, realised that Fanny had been taken by a man, she was immediately worried. So Harriet ran straight round to a neighbour's house named Mrs. Gardiner, and she asked Mrs. Gardiner if she'd help look round like the surrounding fields, meadows, hop fields to see if they could find Baker and Fanny. And it wasn't long before they did find Baker. They found him in the same hop fields by the meadow that he originally met the girls in, but he was alone and there was absolutely no sign of Fanny. So Mrs. Gardiner asked Baker what he'd done with Fanny. Obviously they knew that he'd picked her up and just walked away with her. And he just kind of replied that he gave her money for sweets. He always did that with the kids around the town because he's generous and she was probably off getting her sweets. So Mrs. Gardiner replied to Baker, "I have a great mind to give you into the police." And Baker told her that, pretty much in his own words, that she could do what she wanted. He didn't care. But remember, Frederick Baker was a solicitor's clerk in the town, and that was a very kind of respected and trustworthy job. He was a very respected and trustworthy individual in the town. And so if he gave a reasonable explanation as to where Fanny was, they kind of believed it. Obviously, they didn't 100% believe it. They were still suspicious of him, but I mean, you know what I mean. They just had to kind of believe him. I mean, she wasn't with him like they thought that she would be, and he gave a reasonable explanation. And so Harriet and Mrs. Gardiner just kind of returned home and waited for Fanny to come home. They waited and they waited and they waited, but still at around 7:30 p.m, Fanny still hadn't arrived home, and at this point they were reasonably worried. And so they banded together a group of neighbours to all go out and search kind of the nearby meadows and hop fields. So they began along the hollow, which was that strip of road that the girls liked to run up and down, but there was absolutely no sign of Fanny there. So then they headed to the hop field, which was just by Flood Meadow, where Harriet and Mrs. Gardiner had recently seen Frederick Baker and spoken to him. But when they got there, they were met with a labourer from the town. His name was Thomas Gates. He was a Crimean War veteran turned labourer, and he was working in the town. He was walking home from work. He took a shortcut through this hop field and he saw something terrifying. He saw the severed head of a child stuck on top of 2 hop poles, and the head itself had also been mutilated. One of the child's ears had been cut off, and there were 2 large incisions from the mouth all the way to the ear, creating a kind of smile shape. Immediately, when Harriet heard of the news, obviously there was only one child missing, it had to be Fanny. And so she ran all the way to the town to go and tell her husband, George. So Harriet set off running to go and meet George, who was playing cricket, but due to obviously all of her overwhelming emotions, Harriet collapsed on her way there, and so someone sent a message to George. When George heard the news, he went straight home and loaded his shotgun and went looking for Baker. However, the neighbours kind of managed to calm him down, and they had to stay up with him all night to make sure he didn't go out looking for Baker. The next day, hundreds of people, it seemed like the whole town, was out looking for Fanny's remains and like murder weapons or any form of evidence. But it's actually believed that this really kind of hindered the investigation because hundreds of people were trampling over like possible evidence. A base was set up in town at a pub called the Leith and Bottle for people to kind of report back to if they found anything, to bring back any forms of evidence that people might find, because obviously it wasn't just police on this case, it was volunteers from the town, hundreds of them. So they set up this pub for anyone to just kind of drop in and give any form of information. Fanny's clothes were found, they were cut up into shreds and they were found scattered all over the fields in the surrounding area. However, her hat was never found. And then people began to find body parts. Fanny's body had been dismembered and scattered across the nearby fields for just anyone to find. Fanny's torso was found with half of one of her legs and the other leg was hanging on by the smallest amount of flesh. There were 3 incisions on the left side of her chest. There were 5 incisions on her liver. All of the contents of the inside of her torso were removed, including her heart, which was also found separately. Her remaining legs, arms, and feet were all found separately. One of her feet was actually found still inside her shoe, and all the different parts of her body just had kind of seemingly random deep cuts all over them. Both of her eyes were found in the nearby river. There was also a rock found with flesh and hair on it, and whoever found that rock believed it could have been like a possible murder weapon, maybe. However, the murder weapon was believed to have been small knives, and they still hadn't been found at this point. All the different parts of Fanny's body were taken back to the pub, the leather and bottle, to be sewn back up so that they could be taken to the police station to be looked at. That evening, the police superintendent, William Cheney, arrived at the Leith and Bottle pub to be kind of informed of everything that had happened. And when he got there, he was handed a bundle labelled Portions of a Child. When William Cheney was told the whole story, he was immediately suspicious of Frederick Baker, just like everyone else was. And so he ordered his whole police team to go and track down his work. They arrived at his work at the solicitor's office at 9 p.m. and Baker was actually still there, even though he normally left an hour earlier at 8 p.m. every day. Despite being the only suspect in the whole case, he was the only person that police were looking at. He was adamant that he was innocent. And so police did kind of look at other different avenues for a couple of hours, but ultimately decided it had to be Frederick Baker. By the time the police went to arrest him, there was already a huge mob of townspeople outside and they were, as you can imagine, very angry. And so police had to sneak him out of a back door out of fears that someone might try and kill him. And when he was searched at the police station, Frederick Baker was found to be in possession of 2 small knives. And the murder weapon was believed to have been 2 small knives. Both of the knives were clean, they weren't stained, and you might say, well, he cleaned them, he washed them, obviously. However, they also weren't rusty. And I don't know if that's like a clue or anything, but that seemed to come up a lot in my research. People said, well, they weren't rusty, but they also weren't stained, so how could he have used them? And I don't know if like metal in the 1800s just wasn't treated very well in the production and it got rusty really quickly when it came in contact with water. I have no idea. So I don't know if that's a clue or not, but all I know is that this man had 2 small knives, which was the believed murder weapon. I mean, and he was the only suspect. The only suspect in the whole case had the believed murder weapons. So I feel like that's enough evidence for me. He also had spots of blood on the cuffs of his shirt, on his socks, and also his trousers had been soaked to get rid of any blood staining, but there was still blood staining on his pants. And when police asked Frederick Baker why he had so much blood on him, he replied, well, I don't see a scratch or cut on my hands to account for the blood, which is just so creepy. Baker was just overall just very creepy, very eerie and very relaxed and calm in his interviews. He didn't seem like he was there on a murder charge. He seemed like he was just, I don't know, just sat at a friend's house or something. He was very creepy. During his questioning, another group of police officers went to his work at the solicitor's office and just went and looked around all his things to see if they could find like any further murder weapons, just anything, any form of evidence at his work. They didn't find any murder weapons or anything relating to the murder directly, but they did find a diary, which was the evidence they needed to say that this was 100% Frederick Baker. There was an entry made in the diary for that day, August 24th, 1867, and the entry said, killed a young girl, it was fine and hot. The last sentence meaning the weather, but I think that's even more creepy that he just put those 2 sentences together. Killed a young girl, and then just a comment about the weather, as if those are like equal subjects. I think that was the most interesting part for me. A lot of kind of articles that I read kind of left off that second sentence, but I think it was really important to put that in because it shows how unimportant he feels the murder was. He feels like it was a similar subject to just kind of talking about the weather, and that to me is so creepy. So Baker tried multiple times to claim that he was innocent, and one of his claims was that he was actually insane and so he wasn't criminally responsible for this murder. And there were actually some grounds for that, not for Frederick in particular, but his family had a long kind of history with mental health issues. Frederick himself had attempted suicide in the past, his sister died from a form of mania, his father spent a little time in a mental hospital. However, Frederick himself was determined to be completely mentally sane. He then tried to claim he was innocent because he was intoxicated. However, witnesses and people that had spoken to him earlier that day said that that's just not true. He wasn't intoxicated that day. And obviously, if you remember, Harriet and Mrs. Gardiner spoke to him like maybe 20 minutes after he committed the murder, and they would have known if he was intoxicated or not, and he just wasn't. So Frederick Baker was being held in Alton Prison from August when the murder happened until December when his trial would be, just because he's a potentially dangerous person. Until he's decided guilty or not guilty, he can't be let out on the streets. But in that time before his trial in December, some new evidence emerged. In October, so 2 months after the murder took place, a young boy that lived on the same street as Fanny Adams came forward saying that he saw Frederick Baker in the minutes after he supposedly killed Fanny. The boy said that he saw Frederick Baker leave the hop garden at 2 p.m. that day, and his hands were covered in blood and he had blood like on his clothing. He said that Baker calmly knelt by the river, he washed his hands, he washed his clothes a little bit with a handkerchief, and then he washed two objects, one of which was a knife, and then put them both in his coat pocket. And you can probably imagine that the other one was the other knife, because I think he only had two objects on him anyway, which were the two small knives. Baker's clothes were sent off for testing, but as you can probably imagine, it was the 1800s. Testing wasn't overly brilliant back then, so they could only determine whether it was human blood or like animal blood. And of course, the blood on Frederick Baker was human. It was determined that Fanny's actual cause of death was probably from a blow to the head using that stone that someone found. It's been suggested that a larger weapon or larger instrument was probably used to dismember Fanny. However, it's not been confirmed and this larger instrument has never been found. But a lot of people say that it would be impossible to dismember Fanny Adams with just two small knives. But I mean, there's conflicting opinions on that, so I don't know. Forensics determined that the dismemberment took less than an hour to complete, and Fanny's body must have still been warm when he was dismembering her. So while Frederick Baker was in Alton Prison awaiting his trial in December, he seemed very disturbed. He wasn't sleeping very well at all. He would get like an hour's sleep per night, and he was barely eating, and he would shudder at the sight of meat. A couple of months later, he was eventually transferred to a different prison, still awaiting his trial in December, and all of that just stopped. So no one knows why he was like that, but as soon as he moved prison, his sleeping schedule was fine, he was eating fine, he was talking to the guards, joking with them, joking with other inmates. He was a completely different person when he moved prisons. On December 5th, 1867, after just 15 minutes of deliberation, the jury came back to say that Frederick Baker was guilty of the murder of 8-year-old Fanny Adams. Baker was sentenced to death and hung on December 24th, so Christmas Eve of that same year, 1867, to a crowd of over 5,000 people. So that's the end of this case. Now let me just explain where the saying Sweet Fanny Adams comes from. I kind of debated putting this in because it's kind of, I don't know, but I feel like a lot of you are going to be thinking the same thing. You're going to have recognised the name Fanny Adams and wondered where it came from. And just remember, I didn't make this up. I didn't make this saying up myself. I'm just kind of relaying the information. So don't get mad at me for this, but it is really kind of distasteful. So the saying Sweet Fanny Adams originated 2 years after Fanny's murder in 1869. New kind of rationed tins of mutton were introduced to the British Navy, and these tins of mutton tasted really bad. And as a kind of messed up joke, the sailors used to kind of joke to each other that maybe it wasn't mutton, maybe it was the remains of Fanny Adams in those tins. And before long, Fanny Adams just became like slang for mutton or stew or just anything of very low value. And now to this day, people still say Sweet Fanny Adams as a synonym for F all, really. So yeah, a very distasteful joke, a very distasteful saying that's still used to this day. I don't like it at all. Thank you so much for watching this video. I know it was a very short one, but it was also a very interesting one, I thought. Thank you so much for listening to Usual Disclaimer. At this point, I just want to say that if you've been affected by any of the topics we discussed today, please check the description where we've left some helpful resources. If you want to hear more cases like this one, make sure to follow Usual Disclaimer on your podcast app so that you get notifications when we post new episodes. And if you really enjoyed, I'd love it if you could leave a rating and a review too. Usual Disclaimer with Ellen O'Neill is an Audio Boom Studios production. See you next time.